Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Welcome to the serialized audiobook of The All-Pro, Season 4 of the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. The All-Pro is also available as an ebook, a paperback, and as an ad-free, unabridged audiobook. For links to purchase any version, visit scottsigler.com/theallpro, one word, no spaces, or find it at scottsigler.com/books. September 2683. With the Tier 3 tournament complete, Quentin, John, and Hokor return to Ionath on Quentin's yacht, the Hypatia. Before leaving Wilson 6, however, Quentin had caught another trench warfare concert with John. After the concert, Quentin had said goodbye to Somalia. Her last kiss had been amazing. The way she pressed her body up against his, and the thing she had whispered in his ear. It had been a long cruise home, plenty of time to review holos of the various prospects they'd targeted. John had his heart set on landing a defensive end named Rich Palmer, who played for the Venus Vultures. Quentin hadn't seen the man play. He'd been busy watching other games and focusing on offensive players. Quentin wanted two players in particular. Getting his way would require some of that poker face that Federico didn't seem to think Quentin possessed. But Quentin did, and he would use it now. Sitting in Hokor's office on the touchback's 18th deck, he talked with Hokor, Greedak the Splithead, Masal the Efficient, and Don Pine. This was their final meeting before Greedak went out to try and sign new rookies, before he engaged in bidding wars, negotiations, or any other nefarious tactic required to bolster the Kraken's ranks. The touchback was mostly empty. It was the off-season, and players were either down on the planet or off in their home systems. The only other sentients on board were a skeleton crew helping Captain Kate Cheevers maintain the ship. Hokor sat behind his desk. His desktop showed several 3-inch-high holographic players in a close-up of on-field action. Stats floated beside the players. Off to Hokor's right, Greedak sat in a chair custom-made to his small dimensions. Masal the Efficient stood next to Greedak. Quentin and Don sat in chairs in front of Hokor's desk.
"So can we get her?" Quentin said. "Can we get Sheboygan?"
He spoke to Greedak, but it was really a numbers-crunching question. Masal the Efficient worked a palm-up display, ripping through numbers faster than Quentin could track. Masal's duties, it seemed, encompassed far more than keeping the touchback neat and orderly. Everyone waited for Masal's answer. A Quith worker, Masal had the same back-folded legs, middle arms, single eye, and pedipalp structure shared by leaders and warriors. Workers were taller than leaders, with muscle-knotted pedipalp arms well-suited to manual labor. Subservient in every way, Quith workers deferred to leaders, warriors, even members of other species. Holo tanks behind Hokor showed several players wearing a myriad of T3 colors. The Krakens had set their sights on 8 candidates. They probably wouldn't get them all, but Greedak would land at least half. Masal looked up.
"Table fluctuations indicate that we will have the finances to sign our top priorities. Receiver Sheboygan, defensive back Gladwin, defensive tackle Tim Crawford, and the half-breed defensive end Rich Palmer. Second priorities are defensive back Cooperstown, outside linebacker Cody Boyer, and linebacker Regott the Unobtrusive.
Don nodded, satisfied.
If we get them all, that really bolsters our defense. We need depth at defensive back. Too bad about Stanish getting pregnant.
Don was right about that. The Kraken's four defensive backs, strong safety Davenport, free safety Perth, cornerback Berea, and cornerback Wahiwa, who had taken over the starting job from Stockbridge, were decent players, but the Sklornil backing them up weren't nearly as talented.
Are you guys sure Stanish is gone? Quentin said. I mean, so she got knocked up. So what?
Her body will permanently change, Don said. By the time she's recovered from dropping that egg sac, she'll be a step slower than you. If a Sklono gets pregnant, her career is over.
Last year, Standish had been the team's backup right cornerback, assigned with the task of covering the opposition's receivers. She saw little playing time, but when she'd been in the game, she'd done her job well. Losing her hurt, but it was better than losing Wahiwa or Berea, the starting cornerbacks. The saying went that you were only as good as your bench. The Krakens had to grab rookies to fill that gap.
Then I hope we get Gladwin in Cooperstown, Quentin said. Defense has enough problems as it is.
We'll get them,
Hokor said.
Then we're all in agreement?
He asked that out of courtesy. The final decisions were his. Only Greedock, the team owner, could overrule him. Greedock had to keep a running balance between personnel needs versus team finances. Finances. That was where Quentin would make his play.
There's one more, Quentin said. I want Tara the Freak from the Mathara Manglers.
Coach Hokor's black striped fur fluffed up.
I told you, Barnes. Absolutely not.
Quentin leaned forward in his chair, rested his elbows on Hokor's desk.
Why not, Coach? Because he looks funny?
Hokor slammed his petty pelt fist down on the desk.
He does not just look funny, Barnes. He is malformed.
You don't seem to have anything against Rich Palmer. He's half human, half heavy G.
He's your kind,
Hokor said.
No one cares how ugly you all are. Weak with do care about failed genetic lines. He is called Tara the Freak for a reason.
Quentin leaned back, threw his hands up in frustration.
Oh, no. Oh, high one. He's malformed. What's going to happen? His long, petty-palp arms are suddenly going to pop off his head, grab a hatchet, and chase us around like some horror holo?
Quentin felt a hand on his right shoulder.
Q, Don said. There's more to it than that.
It was all Quentin could do to not slap Don's hand away.
The guy can catch the ball, Quentin said. He can run routes over the middle. He can take hits. When he's in the game, linebackers will have to cover him, have to watch for him, and that opens up other areas of the field. What more to it is there?
Much more,
Greedock said. Whenever the Quith leader spoke, those around him listened carefully. Greedock's black fur looked impeccably groomed. Silky, shiny, smooth. He wore an outfit of spun silver, burnished so it wasn't reflective enough to compete with the red and blue jewels that form patterns of a solar system across his chest. Dozens of bracelets hung from both sets of wrists. As usual, Greedock's attire screamed money and prestige.
Barnes,
Greedock said.
You've been studying with Kimberlin, have you not?
Quentin nodded.
And have you learned about Quith culture?
A little. Lately I've been focused on physics, some galactic history, that kind of thing.
Well, then allow me to edify you,
Greedock said. His voice rang with calm control, the voice of a sentient who got what he wanted without yelling, without showing emotion.
Hokor told me of your interest in this player. I had my scouts look into him. It is amazing that Tara was not killed when he came out of the egg sac.
What? Kill him when he's a baby?
Such barbarism, and yet everyone called Quentin's home system of the purest nation primitive.
The malformed are usually killed by their leader,
Greedock said.
I myself killed two of my brothers once we hatched and I saw that they were imperfect.
Greedock, a killer from the time he could walk. Quentin shouldn't have been surprised, but such cutthroat behavior shocked him regardless.
Why would you kill your own family?
It is related to breeding bonds.
A prospective female will examine not only the leader with which she might have progeny, but also that leader's worker and warrior sackmates. This gives her better knowledge of the leader's larger genetic makeup and what their offspring may turn out to be. If she sees imperfections in the genetic stock, she will simply choose another leader with which to breed.
You killed your own brothers, Quentin said.
Quentin would have given anything to have his brother back, anything to find his sister, and Greedock had killed two of his own. Sometimes it was hard to accept other cultures as equals. Evil was evil, no matter how you tried to justify it.
I did,
Greedock said.
And I am not alone. That is why you don't see many mutations in the Quith culture. Tara is the only survivor of his brood. Some viral contamination in the egg sac, it seems. He's been an outcast all his life.
Hokor waved his hands across a 3-inch hollow of Sheboygan. She vanished. He tapped a few icons, replacing her with a hollow of Tara the Freak. Tara's long, pedipalp arms drew everyone's attention.
Tara is the only Quith warrior on the Mangler's roster,
Hokor said.
That is why he can play in Mathara. We have 4 warrior players.
So Tara would be our 5th, Quentin said. So what?
Greedock's left metal pincer played with the bracelets on his right pedipalp.
You ask why an obvious prospect like Tara is available? Because Tier 2 and Tier 3 teams know he is... fine. What is the word you use to describe a player whose team unity disruption factor outweighs his or her on-field benefit?
Locker room poison, Pine said. A touch of orange swirled across Greedock's large cornea. Quentin knew that expression. Greedock found something humorous.
Yes,
the leader said.
Poison. How appropriate.
So no one wants him, Quentin said.
Correct,
Hokor said.
No one wants the mutation.
Quentin looked around the room. He'd based his strategy on this moment, knowing he'd have to make his play at the last second and convince Greedock just before the team owner headed out to battle for players.
No one wants him, Quentin said. That means he's affordable.
Greedock said nothing, but his eyes swirled with a touch of light red.
Masal, Quentin said. What is Tara's salary?
100,000,
Masal said.
We'd have to pay at least double that to the Manglers as a transfer fee.
Quentin nodded. Time to play his hand.
So let me see if I get this right. We have a player who can help this team. A player who can take hits and is highly resistant to injury. A player who can catch spit in the wind. A player who we can have for a transfer fee of 200,000 and sign him at the Tier 1 minimum salary, probably for a 3-year contract. And we're going to let him go because he has long arms?
Hokor banged on his desktop again.
You don't understand. The other warriors will not accept it.
Quentin shrugged.
Huh. So our warriors decide who plays for the Krakens and who does not? And here I would have thought that their Shamakoth made those decisions.
The office fell silent. Hokor's fur fell flat. He sat back down in his little chair. Don Pine looked away, but Quentin stared right at Greedock, waiting for a response. Quentin saw more threads of a light red flow across Greedock's eye. Light red, the color of friendship, appreciation, or, in this context, Quentin guessed, respect.
Bonds makes a good point,
Greedock said.
I will look further into this Tara the Freak. If I choose to sign him, the other warriors will support this decision.
Don shook his head.
No, they won't. No disrespect, Greedock, but this is a mistake.
Quentin turned on Don.
That's exactly what you said about George Starcher. How did he turn out?
Don leaned back.
George is fine, so far. But if you bothered to do any research before you made these emotional decisions, Q, you'd know George is always fine for the first season with a new team.
It's different this time, Quentin said. He knows this is his last chance.
Don shrugged.
I hope you're right. And I hope you're right about Tara, but I know you're not.
Quentin waved his hands in annoyance. Don Pine was one of the greats, but he was also old and jaded. So pessimistic. Quentin turned to face the team owner.
Greedock, forget this looking into stuff. Are you going to sign to Ra the Freak or not?
Out of the corner of his eye, Quentin saw Hokor's fur ruffle, saw the coach's eye swirl with threads of black and dark blue. There was no way around the disrespect of appealing to the team owner and overruling the head coach. Don didn't want Ra, Hokor didn't want Ra, but that didn't matter. Quentin would not allow prejudice or racism to determine who suited up in the orange and the black.
Yes,
Greedock said.
We will sign Ra.
Hokor stood up, fur fluffed out full length.
But Shamakath, you can't.
I can't.
Greedock let the word hang. Hokor paused. Then his fur fell halfway to flat. His eye flooded with the green of anxiety. He'd overstepped his bounds. Hokor ran a pedipalp over his six antennae.
My apologies, Shamakath. Of course, the final decision is yours.
Greedock stood.
The decision is mine, and the responsibility, Barnes, is yours. Prepare yourself for an adverse reaction from your warrior teammates. If you can't make the other warriors accept Ra, I will cut him. I am willing to gamble based on your instincts, but we are too close to a championship team to tolerate ongoing disruptions.
Quentin nodded. I agree.
You agree?
Greedock said.
How nice for you.
They filtered out of the office, leaving Hokor to keep flipping through the player holos. Quentin had just taken more control over the franchise, and at Hokor's expense. Quentin would make it up to him. Once Ra started catching passes over the middle, Coach would see, and everything would work out.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
October 2683.
We now return you to this breaking story from the Galactic News Network.
Yes, Brad, I'm at Planet Yal in the Sklorno Dynasty, near the scene of the tragedy. Flight A94B, a ship loaded with some 50,000 Sklorno, exploded near dawn, local time, killing every sentient aboard. This is the worst maritime disaster in this area since the Kredorakian conflict.
Tom, was this an accident or was it foul play?
Well, Brad, that very question is on the minds of investigators from both the Scalorno Dynasty and the Kredorakian Empire. A punch drive explosion caused the disaster. There is no indication of weapons fired at the ship. Investigators are confident the explosion was internal, although it is yet unknown if that explosion was accidental or if it was sabotage. A group called the Purist Liberation Front has claimed responsibility for the blast, but Kredorakian officials say that is unlikely and that the terrorist organization is simply trying to take the credit.
Tom, any statement from the Purist Nation?
Yes, Brad, the Grand Mullah herself stated that the Purist Nation had nothing to do with the disaster, although she did say that since all lives lost were, quote, of demonic descent, the deaths were clear evidence of God's direct interaction in the universe, end quote.
So if it's not a Purist sect, Tom, who would the suspects be?
Well, Brad, Kredorakian officials think that if it was sabotage, the Zoroastrian Guild has to be behind it.
The Zoroastrian Guild, being that shadowy organization dedicated to overthrowing the Kredorakian Empire's control of several systems, of course.
That's right, Brad. But what scares experts isn't the Kredorakian analysis, but rather the Scalorno Dynasty's growing opinion that the culprit is, in fact, the Prawat Jihad itself. Y'all is only a few short light years away from the Prawat-Scalorno border. If the Scalorno believe the Prawat are responsible for this bombing, there could be major ramifications.
Is that due to the Scalorno-Prawat War of 2556, Tom?
That and more, Brad. That war lasted 2 years and cost millions of lives on both sides. It ended without a clear winner, but the Prawat Navy was so weakened that it lost the planet Yawala to the Rewal Association in 2559. Many think the Jihad still blame the Scalorno for the loss of that valuable world. The Scalorno Dynasty is part of Kredorakian-controlled space, but the Jihad was never conquered during the takeover. While no official contact has been conducted with a hostile Prawat in some 40 years, experts are confident the Jihad possesses the galaxy's third-largest navy, behind only the Kredorakian Empire and the Quith Concordia.
But Tom, the Scalorno Dynasty has no navy of its own, so what's the fear?
Brad, there are 269 trillion sentient beings in the dynasty, most of whom are very hostile to the occupying Kredorakian garrisons. Experts estimate the number of interstellar capable craft at some 200 million. The Scalorno are a religious race, capable of unifying and acting upon a central belief in very short order. If the majority of Scalorno decide the Prawat Jihad is at fault and want to attack, there is no way the Kredorakians can stop that many ships. If any Scalorno ships attack Prawat space, the Prawat will view that as an act of war by the Kredorakians because the Kredorakians control Scalorno space. While it is unlikely, it is realistic to say that we're looking at the possible start of a fifth galactic war.
That sounds like a very complicated situation, Tom.
Brad, it certainly is. We'll continue to monitor the investigation of Flight 894B. For GNN, this is Tom Skivers signing off.
This has been a breaking story from the Galactic News Network.
November 2683. The off-season seemed to last forever. After scouting players, Quentin started to go stir-crazy without football. With 2 months until the season began, he decided to visit the Touchback while it was in for repairs at the mind-bogglingly huge dry dock known as the CAS Linus Torvalds. If there wasn't such a big planet behind it, the Torvalds' size would seem almost incomprehensible. Jupiter, of course, was a massive planet, one of the largest in any populated system. Red and orange swirling stripes reminded Quentin of Jawbreakers, the only candy he could afford when he'd been a kid back on Makovey. A Jawbreaker could last days, even weeks if you only worked on it a little each night. The few times he'd had enough money to eat his fill, he'd spend a bit extra on one of those treats. Dozens of glowing lights far off in the distance showed the many stations of the JupiterNet colony, the string of constructs in orbit around the great gas giant. To think this had once been a lifeless planet seems strange. Now 275 million sentients living on board some 7,000 vessels made Jupiter's orbit their home. Quentin's GFL immunity meant he could take his yacht anywhere in Kredorakian-controlled space. That included the Planetary Union.
No shuttle necessary this time out, as the Hypatia itself could fly right inside the Torvalds. Well, the visiting crew could fly it in anyway. Quentin had to take on boarders and cede control of his yacht so that it could be steered inside. He stood in his salon, watching the Hypatia fly through a portal so big his yacht looked like a pea dropped into a big bucket. The portal led through the Torvald's hull. Walls so massive, their thickness was at least 10 times the Hypatia's length. Inside, an empty space so vast it was difficult to comprehend. You could fit an entire football stadium in here. No, four, maybe five stadiums. Lining the Torvald's interior, he saw long pier arms holding the colorful team buses of the other GFL franchises. Red hull with white trim blue stars of the Texas Earthlings. Brown with long yellow trim maroon stripes belonging to the Themela Dreadnoughts. The gold, copper, and silver ship of the Jupiter Jacks, and a half dozen more. The size of the Torvalds made these ships look like the toys of a small child. And there, the orange hull of the Touchback. His temporary pilot flew the Hypatia close to the Kraken's team bus. The Touchback's landing bay doors were open, a strange sight indeed, as they usually open to the emptiness of space. The inside of the Torvalds, however, had its own atmosphere. For two straight seasons, Quentin had spent the majority of his time on the Touchback, either alone in his quarters or surrounded by teammates in the locker room, the dining area, or the practice field. The ship seemed a living thing, a small town whose population was dedicated to preparing for games. The Tier 1 preseason would begin on January 1st, 2684, just 2 months away. Then, the Touchback would again ring with the laughter of players, resonate with the crash of armor hitting armor on the practice field, and, of course, echo with the angry, amplified voice of Coach Hokor, the Hookchest. But in November, during the offseason, the Touchback seemed like a ghost ship. Last season, he'd become aware of the support staff that helped run the Kraken's franchise, a staff that Greedock did not allow to interact with the players. Quentin had spent most of his life in a stratified society, where the working class of McCovey catered to the religious aristocracy. He had hated that life, hated feeling like he was second class, like he wasn't as good because he didn't have rank, position, or money. He would not allow others to see him the way he once saw the McCovey elite. The Hypatia shuddered slightly as it docked. The Torvald's crew led him to his own small landing bay, where a floating supply platform carried him through the Touchback's open bay doors. Waiting inside for him were two women in orange uniforms, seams done in pinstripe black. The woman on the right, a short brunette, held a message board. Her uniform looked like her hair, neat, pressed, immaculate. The woman on the left he recognized from in-ship messages and broadcasts, even though despite 2 years on board, he'd never actually met her face-to-face. Captain Kate Cheevers. She was the taller of the two, but more unkempt. Her uniform was unbuttoned down the chest, the left flap flopping open and showing a black t-shirt beneath. Dirty blonde hair spilled down her back. The flash of three small, gold loops through her left nostril caught the room lights, as did two smaller ones pierced through her right eyebrow. She wore no makeup on her pink skin. Thin lips crinkled at the corners, the mark of a woman who frequently wears an easy smile. Knee-high black boots accentuated legs that were probably quite nice under the orange pants. The thing that caught his eye most of all, however, was the gun belt, angling down from her left hip to her right thigh. The handle of a firearm led into a black leather holster. "Mr. Barnes," Captain Kate said. "A pleasure to meet you." She extended her hand and he shook it. Rough skin. Working class skin. "Captain, please call me Quentin." She winked, a motion that seemed to make her whole head twitch to the right. "You don't want me to call you Elder?" Quentin laughed uncomfortably. "No, please don't. I hate that." Captain K gestured to the other woman. "This is Saida. She's part of the crew. Saida is overseeing landing bay door repairs while I take you on the tour." Saida offered her tiny hand, which seemed to vanish when Quentin shook it. "Nice to meet you," she said. "I asked the captain if I could say hi. I'm a fan." "Thanks," Quentin said. "Hopefully we'll give you a lot to cheer about this year." Saida nodded, then walked to the bay's right side. Quentin saw where she was going, toward a GFL-sized human in grease-smeared coveralls.
Hey, is that George Starcher?
Captain Kate nodded.
It is.
What the hell is he doing? Is he fixing something?
He didn't have anything to do in the off-season, so he wanted to join the repair crew, Kate said. He used to be in the Planetary Union Navy. You didn't know that?
Quentin shook his head.
No, I had no idea.
So, you've never met me, you haven't seen most of our ship, and you don't even know if your teammates are veterans. You don't know much, do you?
Wow, this woman didn't mince words.
Hey, I'm here now, aren't I?
Kate pursed her lips, then nodded.
Fair enough. And that's way more than most of your teammates have ever done. The ship crew is basically considered to be second class to all you fancy football players. You ready for your tour?
Yes. Quentin's eyes once again strayed to her firearm. She saw him looking.
Checking out the help?
Quentin's eyes snapped up.
No, I'm just...
The gun?
He nodded.
Yeah. Is that real?
She smiled. Something haughty in that smile. Something so self-confident it bordered on arrogance. She pulled the pistol and offered it butt first.
Yeah, it's real. You want to touch it?
Quentin held up his hands.
No thanks.
Don't like guns?
No, I don't. Never even held one.
She laughed and holstered the pistol with practiced ease.
Good man. And as long as you're under my watch, you'll never have to. Captain Kate'll keep you safe, pretty thing.
She gave her head twitch wink.
Let's go. You're nice to look at, quarterback, but even in the off-season, I have a lot to do. Let's show you around.
She started on the bridge. It surprised Quentin how small it was, nothing more than a fairly large room packed with holotanks. It could hold only about 10, maybe 12 sentients comfortably, which wasn't bad considering the bridge crew numbered 5, including Captain Kate. Big crystal windows lined three sides of the bridge, providing a view of the Torvald's vast interior and the other ships docked miles away. A glowing, holographic touchback dominated the center of the bridge. 4 workstations sat almost under the hologram, 2 on the left, 2 on the right. 2 chairs sat empty. 2 men, dressed in the crew's orange uniforms, stood and walked over. Captain Kate introduced them as Francis and Agreu. Apparently, she didn't have much use for last names. The bridge had only 1 more chair, a plush affair with holotank arrays in front of each armrest. Captain Kate sauntered to it and sat, crossing her legs and making the chair spin slightly.
"This is where I sit when I'm keeping you footballers safe," she said. "You might say it's a seat of power."
Very nice.
You want to sit in the captain's chair, Quentin?
She winked, a slow wink that showed off her dark eyelashes. Was she hitting on him?
No thanks, Captain.
She pursed her lips in a mock pout, then stood.
I understand. It might be more than you can handle, hmm? Come on, let's see the rest of the little sentients and make it all possible for you to line up on Sunday.
Captain Kate took him to the administrative areas. Quentin met several staffers, mostly Quith workers, but also a few humans and even a bedbug, the small, furry creatures that were the Scalorno males. He'd learned that most of the onboard staff managed ship-based things, like maintenance, customs declarations, food, and supplies. The ship could also handle all of the administrative staff from the Kraken's building. In short, Greedock the Splithead could put every last employee of his franchise in this ship and take them anywhere he wanted to go. In the last year, Quentin had seen the practice field, the locker room, Hokor's office, the dining deck, his quarters, and some of the living areas of the other races, but that was about it. The tour quickly showed him those areas were only about 60% of the ship. The other 40% consisted of living quarters for the crew and administrative staff, repair and manufacturing areas, the galley, and a dozen lifeboats. Quentin asked why there were no lifeboat drills, but she just pointed to the simple pictograms mounted outside the lifeboat hatches. Any sentient could use those images to operate the door, get inside, and jettison if the need arose. She showed him the touchback's punch drive and control area, located not in the ship's rear, but in the ship's front near the bottom deck. He'd never seen an actual punch drive before, and was shocked to find it was nothing more than a room-sized gray ball. It looked like a big, spherical rock. Maybe he'd learn how it works someday. Kimberlin had said the principles involved required physics knowledge far beyond even his. Punch drives weren't the only thing used to move the ship. Captain Cheever showed Quentin banks of impulse engines located in the aft section. Each engine was an antimatter reactor, 50 feet long and 20 feet wide. A row of 7 engines lined the top of the ship. 14 stories below them, another row of 7 lined the bottom.
"So," Kate said, "that's the tour. That's everything?"
She nodded.
"Except for the key livestock pens. You want to see those?"
Quentin thought back to last season's meal with the offensive lineman, to the dear spider creature that still haunted his nightmares.
"No. No, I don't want to see that. Not one bit."
He ran his hand along one of the reactors. This was the heart of the touchback. The engines that carried them anywhere punch drives did not.
"How fast can we go?"
"Why? Do you like to go fast?"
Wink Twitch. This woman made him very uncomfortable.
"No, I just, you know, if we get into trouble."
"We can haul ass," Captain Cheever said. "This used to be a military vessel. When the need arises, we can move quick. But there's a lot of mass in the touchback, so it takes us some time to hit our maximum velocity."
"Can we outrun pirates?"
Quentin knew the Key Fangs franchise had been wiped out by an explosion in 2667. Many speculated that was an accident, but plenty of people thought it was pirates. The new Rodina astronauts had also suffered a disaster when the Purist Nation, Quentin's own people, had caught the Astros' team bus and executed all non-human players.
"If we hit Maxvel, we can outrun just about anything," Cheever said. "But until we hit that speed, we're vulnerable to smaller ships that can close in on us."
"Like fighters?"
She paused, thinking, then nodded.
"Those can be a big problem if they catch you close enough to a planet, but they need a bigger ship to support them. The real pirate problem comes from ships about a quarter the size of the touchback. They have a low enough mass that they can accelerate fast and make a run, try to knock out the engines of a larger ship before the larger ship can accelerate away."
Quentin thought back to his physics lessons with Kimberlin. Pirates weren't that much of a threat these days, but not much of a threat was a far cry from no threat at all. He needed to learn all he could about this. As Michael said, it never hurt to have too much knowledge.
"How big is the touchback anyway?"
"He's 200 meters long and 28 meters wide."
"Meters? What is that in feet?"
Captain Kate laughed and shook her head.
"You never learned metric?"
Quentin shrugged.
"I sort of know it. I just think of things in football terms, mostly. Yards and feet and inches."
"A football field is 100 yards, right?"
120, Quentin said. 2 10-yard end zones, so 120 total."
"Then think of the touchback as 2 football fields end-to-end. Got it?"
Quentin nodded.
18 decks," she said. 14 70-class P-22 impulse engines. He's big. 42,000 GRTs.
"What's a GRT?
Gross registered tons.
"What's a gross registered ton?
If you can't do meters, how about we skip the GRT explanation, okay?"
Her condescending tone annoyed him, but he nodded anyway. No, not condescending, more like patronizing. She didn't think he was smart enough to handle all of this, but she also didn't seem to think that was necessarily a bad thing.
"He's also got 9 quad guns," she said. 3 of them are broken, but he's still got enough to fend off most pirates."
"Why do you keep calling the touchback a he? I thought ships were thought of as girls. Women, I mean, thought of as women."
Kate shrugged.
"People think of ships as the fair sex, so I think of them as male. Hey, you want to see the guns?"
Quentin had never seen actual ship weapons before.
"Sure, yeah."
"Come on, big boy," she said.
Captain Kate will take you all kinds of new places.
High one, Quentin said. This is a cannon?
Captain Cheevers nodded. They stood in a small, plain room. A 4-foot by 4-foot flat black platform rose a few inches from the metal deck. The walls were also black, the whole room lit up by a few overhead lights. The room didn't look dirty, exactly. It just felt unused. Opposite the entry door, Quentin saw a long, horizontal cristial port, about 10 feet long but only a foot high. Through that port, out on the hull of the ship, he saw a long armored shell, paint scratched by countless miles of interstellar travel. Beyond that, faded by distance, the far wall of the Torvalds.
Welcome to Gun Cabin 6, Kate said.
She punched a 3-digit code, 726, into a keypad. The platform surface changed from a flat black to a glossy sheen. She stepped onto the 4x4 platform. She held her hands at chest level, palms down, fingers outstretched. Quentin felt the deck vibrate, just a bit. Through the port, he saw the armored shell split down the middle and slide into recessed housing, revealing a lethal-looking, oblong gun mount that ended in 4 barrels pointing away into the void. The barrels alone had to be 10 feet long each. He'd never seen an active, ship-sized weapon before. That thing out there could destroy an entire shuttle and every sentient on it. The concept scared the crap out of him. A holographic ball of light appeared in front of Captain Kate. Lines stretched up from it, out from it, and forward and back from it. Each line showed a regular series of hash marks.
This is your XYZ axis, she said. Each slash is a kilometer. You can zoom out.
She lifted her fingers so her hands were palm out. The distance between the hash marks shortened. Quentin instantly saw the relation. The shorter the distance between the hash marks, the bigger the scale of the XYZ display.
Or you can zoom in.
She turned her hands palms in, fingers up. The hash marks started stretching away from each other, signifying the scale was closing in. Captain Kate twisted at the hips, moving her hands to the right. The XYZ display changed direction and time, as did the direction of the 4 cannon barrels.
It points where you point, she said.
It doesn't follow eye tracking?
Human eyes flick around too fast, she said. Eye tracking might work in a ground-based combat system, where you can sight a target as it's flying, but things move too fast up here. You flick your eye for a split second, you're wasting rounds. So it's hand gestures with the computer auto-correcting.
How do you fire?
She looked back at him and smiled.
You want to see me shoot the scary cannon, pretty boy?
I don't know.
Wink twitch.
It's okay. I'm the captain. We're loaded with blanks for stress testing in dry dock, but you'll get the idea.
She turned back to face forward, leveled her hands, then clenched her left fist. The top 2 quad cannons roared, cones of smoke blowing out their rears. She clenched her right fist, and the bottom 2 barrels fired. The deck vibrated in time with the shots, insinuating the cannon's awesome power. She paused, then made left, right fists, a bam, 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 bam of vibration and smoke plumes. Had they been live rounds, aimed at a ship like his yacht, how bad would the damage be? Would sentience be dead? Captain Kate again pointed her fingers out, hands palms down, then slowly dropped them to her thighs. The gun turret fell still, then lowered. Kate stepped off the holoplate. She punched the 3-number code into the keypad. The holoplate's glossy light faded. Once again, it was just a flat black piece of flooring. She walked back to Quentin, smiling confidently.
Did you like that? Did it scare you?
A little.
Don't worry, she said. Captain Kate is here to take care of you. I'll keep you safe.
She was staring at him, smiling, but it wasn't a friendly smile. He felt an urge to get out of this confined, secluded space. He turned and walked to the door, talking over his shoulder so he could see her, but didn't have to make eye contact.
You just point and shoot? That seems so easy.
Captain Kate nodded.
Sadly, killing usually is. Shooting is easy anyway. Out in the void, things move fast. We would be shooting projectiles at objects moving at thousands of kilometers an hour. Projectiles that themselves have to travel several thousand kilometers to hit that moving target.
So why don't the computers handle it?
She shook her head.
Computer-controlled weaponry is illegal. Kretorakians rarely allow a ship to have defensive weaponry at all. Computer-controlled guns can hit just about anything, including the Kretorakian ships that might come to board us.
So if we do get attacked, who does the shooting?
Captain Kate waved her hand dismissively.
Don't worry your pretty head about that. The Kraken staff is trained to handle emergencies.
Quentin thought of Massal the Efficient, tried to imagine the Quith worker firing the anti-spacecraft cannons.
Captain, are you sure? I mean, the guys and girls on the team, they have really great reaction time. And as for coordination, they
just worry about football, Cheever said,
her tone still sweet, but also a bit annoyed.
If it makes you feel better, the Quith warrior players man the guns. They're experienced soldiers. We have things under control, Quentin. I have to get back to my duties. But if you have any other questions, or you want anything else, I'll be in my cabin after ship dusk.
Something about her smile. Again, it made him uncomfortable. Quentin wondered if he would ever get used to all of these women who were so different from what he'd known back in the Pyrrhus Nation.
Thanks, Captain Cheevers.
Call me Kate, she said.
Wink twitch.
But only when no one is around.
Okay, Kate. Thanks again.
Quentin turned and walked off, as quickly as he could without running.
You have been listening to The All-Pro, Season 4 of the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by Ariok Morningstar with post-production by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on Scott and more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song The Kids Are Coming For You by the band Super Weapon. You're kind of sick.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.